Hi, this is Derek from Atlanta. Unlike Bob, I am a former law enforcement officer, but I still enjoy listening to a practical show by a practical guy. You're listening to the Handgun World Podcast.
Hi folks, I'm Bob Main. Welcome to another episode of the Handgun World Podcast. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. This is episode number 365. I'm going to address some listener voicemails today. Had some couple of great call-ins and some good topics brought up. I've also got a couple of gun reviews. I want to talk about a gun that I've just recently acquired and another one that I recently acquired several months ago that I've been liking a lot but had just a few minor challenges with, but that's all being taken care of. So thanks for tuning in, folks. This is a practical show done by an everyday guy, and that is me. I hope all of you are doing well. Let's go ahead and address the first voicemail. Derek from Atlanta called in. Let's listen to what he has to say.
Hi, this is Derek from Atlanta, Georgia. I was calling. I listen to your podcast all the time. Started listening a couple months ago, and I'm an over-the-road truck driver, so I have a lot of opportunities to, a lot of time on my hands, so I've caught up on most all of your previous archived podcasts, and I came up with a question that I wanted to ask you and get your opinion on it and see what you thought about it. Grant, my work requires me to travel all around the lower 48, and I do carry a firearm in my truck and on my person with me in most states that I'm legally allowed to carry on my person, and obviously with this type of work, it brings me to some not so safe areas and around some many different environments and cultures and sometimes not so friendly people. I've witnessed acts of violence. I've had friends that have been victims or somebody has attempted to make them a victim of crimes in my life so far. So I'm, there's no way I'd go without one. With that being said, I have always started to wonder and question, maybe a couple months or so, if I were to, get into having to use my weapon in self-defense, how do you keep from not, being perceived as the, assailant if you were to get into a shootout with somebody or whatever? Basically, if somebody were to approach me in an attempt to, commit a violent felony against me and I were to use my weapon, but the people around me didn't happen to see what the assailant did beforehand, how do I keep from making that known so in case somebody else is concealed carrying, they don't use their weapon against me thinking I am the primary aggressor in the circumstance? Any opinion or anything like that you might have would be greatly appreciated, because that's obviously, you were to get to a situation like that, you're not going to be, you should have good observational skills, but you're going to be primarily focused on, the person with the weapon that's right in front of you, not who's coming up behind you as much when you're trying to keep from getting, shot. How do you make yourself, not be perceived as the primary aggressor, bottom line, to, other civilians around you so you don't become the victim of somebody mistakenly thinking that you are the primary aggressor, when you're trying to engage somebody. I mean, obviously, I don't know, would you be, you know, shouting to somebody to, you know, what's going on? And I don't know if you'd necessarily be thinking about that in a circumstance like that. Any help you can, or advice you can give me on that one, would be greatly appreciated. Thanks. Love your show, and have a good day.
Well, thanks for calling in, Derek. I appreciate that. He brought up some real good points here I want to discuss. You need to make yourself look like the good guy as much as possible. Now, I know you're the good guy. If you have to use your gun in self-defense, and it's a legitimate self-defense use of your handgun, or any gun, really. Doesn't matter if it's a long gun or handgun. As long as it's a justifiable use of force, which, and by the way, this is why I think you should take at least one course on what is justifiable use of force. There are some pretty clear definitions that are fairly consistent over all of the different states that people live in that at least are relatively free states that believe that you do have the right to self-defense. Now, the way to do that, the way to, you know, make yourself look like the good guy as much as possible, first of all, worry about saving your life. If you're attacked, the first thing you need to do is worry about saving your life, okay? Sometimes you might not even have to fire your gun, but be prepared in case you do have to fire your gun. You need to be ready for that. Be the first to call 911. You know, I love what my good friend Chaz from the Road Gunner podcast says. He says, carry a loaded cell phone with you all the time. And be the first person to call 911. So you need to be able to make the call first, establish yourself as the victim that you are. And you need to explain that you were in fear for your life, that someone was trying to kill you, that they had a weapon, and you need help, and ask for help. Okay, that's vitally important. Also, if you come to a class, if you go to any class taught by Suarez International, that's an intermediate or an advanced level class, or if you come to some of the classes that Ben and myself teach, we'll teach you how to do after-action assessments. You know, when I was, one of the very first things I learned at Suarez International when I took close-range gunfighting, level 2, is the after-action assessment, 360-degree after-action assessment using the Sewell position. And, you know, putting your gun in the Sewell position, it's kind of hard to explain on a podcast, but you don't look like the aggressor when you do that. You don't look like the aggressor, but yet you can check all around. You have to understand that even after you neutralize the first threat, there could be other threats coming from other directions. So you need to know how to effectively check your 360, check all the way around you. I can also show you another way to do it, a pretty effective way to do it, where you don't even have to turn your body around. Okay, you can still look 360 degrees and look, you know, check for other bad guys and things. And you can keep your gun in what we call kind of a friendly position so that you don't look like the aggressor. Remember, probably everything you do in a defensive gun use is probably going to be on videotape somewhere, or there are going to be eyewitnesses somewhere. And so it's very important that these eyewitnesses don't testify that you looked like a bad guy with a gun. Now, if you're coming up to a situation where you see somebody else victimizing somebody at gunpoint, be careful. Be real careful with that. You have no idea what's going on if you're coming into the situation that's on progress, or that's in progress. You don't know if the person that is pointing a gun might be defending themselves, or they could be the aggressor and they could be the bad guy. You don't know that. So be very, very careful about getting involved. My first choice is to get away from that situation. But, you know, if you're the kind of person that wants to defend the life of another person, and I will do that, I'll probably ask that person to put their gun down and try to quickly, within seconds, see what's going on. But, you know what? I'm even a little bit reluctant to do that because getting a concealed carry license doesn't deputize us. And I know I might be treading into some controversial waters right now, but here's what I'm going to say. It does not deputize us, ladies and gentlemen. You do not have the duty or the obligation as a private citizen to save somebody else. Now, does that mean I won't save somebody else? No, it doesn't mean that. As a matter of fact, I think the right moral thing to do is to try to save somebody else. But, you know, like this caller just brought up in this voicemail, you don't know who's the aggressor. You don't know who is the good guy. And then how do you make yourself out to be someone who is not a bad guy? That's primarily going to happen after you defend yourself or defend the life of a loved one. If you have to defend the life of a loved one, your call to 911, you should be explaining to that person that you just had to defend the life of your son or your daughter or your wife or your husband. Or whomever it is, or your brother or your sister, whoever was with you at the time, that they were trying to be killed. All right, because that's all going to be recorded, and that's all probably going to be evidence if you have to go to trial. All right, so you need to establish yourself as the victim. I hope that answers Derek's question. Gun handling is very important as well. Ben and I like to teach you how to properly handle your gun so that you don't look like the bad guy. So that you look like the good guy that you really are. All right, so good call in, Derek. I appreciate that. If other listeners have, if you have some ideas for Derek, I'm all ears. So go ahead and call into the voicemail, 210-646-1727. That is the official Handgun World podcast voicemail number, 210-646-1727, and you can leave a message up to 3 minutes in length if you have some input on this. This is why you need training classes, folks. What Derek just talked about is exactly why you need training. Somebody that is untrained with a handgun could actually get themselves into more trouble after they have to defend and save their life. If they don't know what they're doing. Yes, okay, they've defended and saved their life. They successfully used their handgun. But now some serious, serious trouble could start if you don't know what you're doing. And even if you do know what you're doing, you can still do everything right. And you could still get taken to court and put on trial. So, do you have a membership to the for the Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network? Or Texas Law Shield, or U.S. Law Shield, or an organization like that, which are basically attorneys on retainer. If you carry a gun, you need to seriously think about that. Ask other people who didn't have that. Check around. Start doing some internet searches and find out what it cost them. What kind of money, what kind of aggravation and grief it cost them because they didn't have an attorney on retainer to help them out. Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network or Texas Law Shield or U.S. Law Shield. I am a member of both. All right, let's listen to the next voicemail.
Hey, Bob, how you doing? This is Nelson here from San Antonio. I wanted to call in and leave you a message. I've heard you talk a lot about the mag holder magazine carriers, and I have to say I own a mag holder for the Glock magazine. I carry a Glock 26 most of the time, and on the mag holder I carry a Glock 17 mag just for the higher capacity as my spare mag. I typically carry the mag holder pretty much in front of my waist, essentially. So if you picture your belt buckle, it's just right, it's just to the right of the belt buckle itself, pretty much 12:05 o'clock position, essentially. So my draw of the magazine, if I need a reload, is directly in front of me so I can quickly grab the magazine without taking my, shifting my body or taking my eyes off of the target, or anything of that nature. And it's pretty fast. I equate it to, drawing from your gun from the appendix position. So I've got great experience with that mag holder. So really pleased with that design. And that's my primary, magazine carry, option, or the one I like the most. But I also wanted to talk to you because I also have a Ruger LC9, the single stack 9mm, and I ordered a mag holder for that magazine as well. This is probably about a year ago. The issue that I have found is that the magazine does not come out so easily from that holster because it's just too tight. And I contacted Mag Holder, and they had said, you know, put your magazine in a sock and put that inside. And I left the magazine there for about a month or so, and it's still just way too tight. You cannot pull that magazine out of that mag holder as easily as you would think, or as easily as I can with my Glock magazine. So I don't know if that was just an original version, if there's a newer version out there, but I know you mentioned that you use a mag holder for your Smith & Wesson Shield, another single-stack magazine, and I don't know if you had run into that particular problem and what your take was. There may be a brand new version that's, you know, been fixed or that issue has been addressed. But I just want to kind of hear your thoughts on that. But again, yes, I do love the mag holder, particularly for Glock magazines more than anything else until I'm proven otherwise. But anyways, to hear your feedback on it. And as always, keep up great work. I look forward to training with you soon once again.
Nelson, thank you for calling in. Hey, before I address Nelson's question or his comment, Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network and Texas Law Shield, they are not sponsors, okay? I don't get anything from talking about them. I just believe in them. A lot of times I talk about things on this podcast about what I believe in and what I use. Concealment Solutions is a sponsor. ConcealmentSolutions.com. They make excellent appendix carry holsters, excellent outside the waistband holsters, Black Mamba inside the waistband, hybrid holsters, very good. I use them all. I only talk about and review products that I use and that I like, and so that brings up another one. But first of all, my sponsor, ConcealmentSolutions.com. That's ConcealmentSolutions.com. Check them out. I think you'll be happy. So Nelson talked about using mag holders, horizontal mag carriers, which is now my preferred method of carrying an extra magazine. Mag holders. You can also get mag holders at ConcealmentSolutions.com. By the way, anything you order at Concealment Solutions, please use Handgun World as the coupon code. You get 10% off. Handgun World as the coupon code, you get 10% off. And Jason knows that my listeners are buying from him. It'll help me out and let him know that there's activity in what I say on my show. Activity for him. So, Nelson, regarding your comment and your question, I only use mag holders for my double stack mags. For M&P, Glock, Walther PPQ, double stack mags. And as you said, you have no problem. For my single stack mags, I've never tried mag holder. First of all, they seem to be hard to get. It seems to be hard to get a mag holder, horizontal mag carrier for single stack guns like Smith & Wesson Shields and Glock 43s and Walther PPS. I use Dale Fricke. I use Dale Fricke horizontal mag carriers. Dale Fricke, F-R-I-C-K-E, F-R-I-C-K-E. Just Google that and or search that, Dale Fricke horizontal magazine carriers. I like them for the single stack guns. I like them. They're not real big. They work very well. I carry them in the same position as you, Nelson. I put them at about 10 or 10:30, which is in front of my hip bone, but I don't carry them quite as far over as the belt buckle. That's, you know, if you think of a clock, about 10:30 or 11 o'clock is on the left-hand side is where I carry. I like to carry at least one spare magazine that way. So, and they lock in tight. The mags lock in real tight in there, and it seems to work real well. So check out Dale Fricke. Again, they don't sponsor my show, but I have, I think, four or five of their horizontal mag carriers, and I really like them a lot. So check that out. That's about all I got for you on that one, Nelson. If somebody else out there who's listening, if you use mag holders for single-stack mags, let me know about the issue. Maybe it's because you have an early version of the mag holder, Nelson. I don't know. Maybe the later versions don't quite have that issue. Not quite sure. Okay, quick break. And what I want to do after the break is I want to let you know a little something about me. A little something about me, and then the main topic, where I talk about a couple of guns, and I talk about a new experiment and things that I'm doing with my shooting. I'm not really experimenting with concealed carry. Concealed carry, I've told you folks, I got it down to about two or three guns consistently. Two or three guns consistently. That's what I carry. I mean, I'm going to be this is life-saving equipment. I'll be betting my life on this. So I want to make sure that I'm using guns that I'm totally familiar with and that I know are working very, very well for concealed carry. And those would be either a Glock 19, a Glock 43, Glock 42, Glock 26, Smith & Wesson Shield. Love that gun, Smith & Wesson Shield, 9mm. Put it through the paces. It works well for me. So, okay, that's about four or five. That's about what I carry, folks. Now, I shoot other things. I shoot other things, other guns in competition. And I you know, go to training classes and sometimes and train with other guns. But I have shot my carry pistols a lot. I'm good with them. And they're reliable, and that's what I stick with, and that's what I would suggest that you do. So from a concealed carry standpoint, I'm going to say, become a one-gun person. And when I say a one-gun person, I'm talking about a one type of gun, a one platform, a one type, a certain type of gun, and stick with that for concealed carry. Okay? And I'm only talking about concealed carry, folks. Stick with that platform or that type of gun. You know, there are a lot of similarities between a Smith & Wesson Shield and a Glock 19. You know, the Shield seems like a small Glock 19, especially when I put the 8-round magazine in the Shield. When I put the 8-round magazine in the Shield, that grip is just as long as a Glock 19 grip. I don't know if you knew that or not. Of course, it's a lot skinnier, it's a lot thinner, but it's just as long. And, of course, the sight radius is not as long and the barrel is not as long as a Glock 19, but it sort of feels to me like a miniature Glock 19. And the Glock 43 also, of course, it's a little bit smaller than the Shield, but it kind of feels like a mini Glock 19 as well. So familiarity of, well, I can't say that word. Being familiar with that gun is very important, and they're all so similar that they work very well for me for concealed carry. All right, here we go. Next couple segments coming up.
England, Wales, Scotland, Australia, Canada, and 12 other industrialized and largely disarmed nations have higher violent crime rates than the U.S. This is according to a Dutch Ministry of Justice multinational survey. According to that survey, England and Australia are twice as vicious as America, with higher rates of robberies, muggings, and assaults. Switzerland, a well-armed nation, has a violent crime rate about the same as ours. Disarmed countries are dangerous countries, and America's few disarmed cities are the most dangerous in the Union. This is no coincidence. Arm yourself with facts to strip the gun control industry bare. Visit gunfacts.info and get your free copy of Gun Facts. Called Indispensable by Cam Edwards of NRA News, Gun Facts is your rapid reference guide to debunking gun control myths and shaming politicians into obedience. www.gunfacts.info.
I got something I want to say. You know, folks, I want to talk about gifted time for a little bit here. I'm living on gifted time, folks. You know, if you've been following my show, you know my story. You know my recent cancer fight. And I believe that God has given me gifted time. You know, I used to be the kind of person that didn't think much about every day and being thankful for every day. Boy, he really changed my mind. He really got my attention. You know, I came to the point where I didn't know if I was going to survive. I was in a hospital room not knowing if I was going to survive. You know, the Lord has brought me through beating stage 4 lymphoma. I'm a little bit nervous because I have to go in for another MRI next month, early next month in May. And, you know, I start getting nervous a few weeks before each test because I'm just afraid that they're going to find that my cancer's come back. But thank you very much for all your prayers. It works. You know, a 6-hour brain surgery to remove a cancerous tumor from the base of my brain and a stem cell transplant in early of 2015 at MD Anderson. You know, God has used these doctors and these surgeons in a miraculous way, folks. And I don't, you know, again, this show is not meant to be a sermon, and I don't know what your faith is, but I'm living proof that there, you know, life is a gift, folks, and it's a gift that we should all appreciate. And I'm living on gifted time. Every day when I get up, I thank the Lord above because I have another day. That is my faith. And I've told you guys many times that I am a Christian. In fact, I've had people get a little bit offended. And I don't want you to be offended, folks. I'm not trying to impose my faith on you. I'm just telling you what I believe, and I'm just sharing it with you. Don't stop listening to the podcast just because I mentioned this once in a while. There's a lot of good stuff in the podcast, but you need to know me. A lot of you write me emails and you say, "Hey, Bob, I've been listening to you for so long. You know, you're almost like part of my family, or you're like a relative or a close friend or something." Well, you know what family and relative and close friends talk about? Sometimes they share faith and they share their experiences. And that's what I'm doing here. So I just wanted to talk to you about gifted time. Folks, please don't take your lives for granted. Please don't do that. It's very important that whatever you want to do, do it now. Whatever you want to say, say it now. Whatever you want to experience, experience it now. That's very important. And I learned that, and I learned that the hard way. All right, that's all I wanted to say now for the next segment. Okay, I just thought I'd record some random thoughts here, let you know what's going on with some things that I'm doing in the shooting world as I'm traveling in the mobile studio, and I got a little bit of extra time. Recently, Ben and I put up some real good videos on the Shooters Club. I want to let you know that before I get into some of my random thoughts. We just did one on how you can practice four different skills, even if you're at a square range and you're standing in a shooting stall and you can't move around and things, you can still practice four really critical self-defense skills, even one-handed shooting. So Ben did a video on that, a real good one. I did a video on how you might want to modify the grip of your pistol. I don't see anything wrong with modifying the grip on a pistol, especially if you have a Glock or a Smith & Wesson M&P. It's very popular on Glocks. You know, from a carry standpoint, from a legal standpoint, I don't really see anything wrong with modifying the grip. Yeah, I mean, you haven't modified the trigger, you haven't, you know, reloaded some of your own ammunition. All you're doing is just changing the grip to make it fit your hand a little better. Don't you think that'd be pretty easy to articulate and make the case? I think that would be. So I did a good video up on the Shooters Club about that. If you're not a member of the Shooters Club, wow, you're missing out on some really good videos, like 54 or 55 videos. And shortly, Ben and I are going to record another audio podcast for Shooters Club members only. It's only $8 a month, $75 a year. If you're an annual member at $75 a year, I'm going to extend this. If you're an annual member at $75 a year or at only $50 for a renewal, I'm going to extend it to May 30th. You get a free Shooters Club hat. Check it out. Go to handgunworld.com. Go to the accessories page and check out the Shooters Club hats. They're nice flex fit hats that I think you're going to like. So I extended it to May 30th. Either get a one-year membership to watch our videos, or renew your existing membership. All right, some random thoughts. Well, I made some additions to my armory. I bought a SIG 229 Legion series. It is just a sweet and a cool pistol. It's Ben Branham's fault, so I'm blaming Ben Branham at Sparks Firearms and from the Modern Self-Protection Podcast. It's his fault, but anyway, I did it. A SIG 229 Legion series. Hey, first of all, I got to say I love this thing. The trigger, I am going to carry this pistol, by the way, and one of the reasons, I have to train with it first. I got to give it a 1,000-round trigger job before I train with it. One of the reasons I'm going to carry it is I want to train and carry a double-action, single-action gun again. That's not been my favorite style of gun, and most of you might be thinking, wow, Bob, you did that? Yeah, I did that. I'll tell you why. SIG has done a marvelous job with the action and the trigger. I think it's developed by Bruce Gray. So the double action trigger, even though they say it's like 10 pounds, it doesn't feel like that. And it's very, very smooth. And that's a double action, single action transition I might be able to get used to. We'll see what happens. For those of you that might not know what I'm talking about, the first trigger pull on a gun like that is double action. In other words, when you're pressing the trigger, it's also fully cocking the hammer and then releasing it and firing the round. But after you fire that first round in double action, every other shot is single action, because then the gun's already cocked, the slide has retracted, cocked the hammer, so all you're doing is just releasing the hammer. And wow, what a sweet single action trigger pull that is. That's a beautiful, beautiful gun. What they've done with the grips, what they've done by giving some undercut relief under the trigger guard and some perfect texturing. They've even shrunk the size of the levers, of the decock lever and the slide stop lever, which I don't use that, by the way. I don't use to chamber around. I never use the slide stop lever. I'm not a big fan of that, because if you're shooting different guns, it's in different place on almost each gun. Each gun has the slide stop lever located in a slightly different place. Besides that, you don't use your slide stop lever to clear a malfunction. Think about that. When you clear a malfunction, you know, you tap, you rack that bad round out of there. Okay? And then you're running the slide when you're doing that. Even if you have to take the magazine out, put a fresh magazine in, you still have to run the slide to chamber a fresh round. I believe in consistency, especially when it comes to self-defense. The least amount of thinking you have to do, the better. Some people will argue with me on this. Some people say, well, if I just practice it 10,000 times using the slide release, you know, I'm going to get it. Maybe so, yeah. But what happens if you pick up another gun? What if you happen to pick up another gun that you haven't practiced 10,000 times using the slide stop lever to release the slide and chamber a new round? Okay, now you might miss it, or you might cost yourself some time. One of the biggest things I learned at the Tom Givens class is don't be costing yourself time in a gunfight. So I want to train with this SIG. I got to give it a 1,000-round trigger job first. I've got to get used to that double action, single action transition. I've got to get used to decocking the gun before I put it in the holster. But if I can master this, and if I can run this as good as I can run my beloved Glock 19, this SIG might find its way in my holster as a carry piece. And I'll tell you, it does not have a manual safety, so I can live with that. I can live with double-action guns. I carry a Car PM9 quite a bit, which is double-action only. Double-action only on a Car PM9. I can live with that. I've trained with double-action only guns. So as long as I don't have to depress a manual safety, that's kind of what I'm a little bit against. And I'm not the biggest fan of grip safeties either, because I've seen it happen more than once, folks. More than once. I've seen somebody not get a perfect grip. They didn't do their draw properly, and they didn't get a perfect grip, and they couldn't fire their pistol. And that could happen in a fight, folks. I really believe that. That could happen in a fight. You might not draw your gun properly, you might not get the proper grip, but you still might have to get it out of the holster and press the trigger and defend your life. You want the gun to fire. So the good thing about the SIG, no grip safety, no manual safety. That's a draw and fire weapon, and it's a fine weapon. It's got aluminum frame. Of course, the rest of it is steel. Just Google the SIG Legion. series. Hey, I had a good month last month. I had a good sales month, so I treated myself. A little bit extra commissions I made, and I treated myself to that pistol. I bought a Glock 26 that I'm going to give to my son because the 26 for me is, I might as well carry, if I'm going to go to a small gun, I might as well carry a Shield or a Glock 43. But I think my son is going to like the 26 because I had him shoot my G19 the last time that we're out, and he really liked that. He just thought it was a little bit too big for him. And he's an accomplished enough shooter where I don't think that I need to put a really large gun in his hands to control it. And so I think he's going to like the Glock 26. I got plenty of magazines with the pinky extensions that add one or two rounds with the magazine extensions. So he's going to like that. So he now has a Smith & Wesson Shield and a Glock 26. And those are the only two handguns I'm going to give him. Those are reserved for him. Whenever he goes to the range, those are his guns. And when he is of age to legally own them, I will transfer them over to him, gift them to him or whatever. So they're still in my possession, in my ownership, but they are earmarked for my son. So, you know, hey, every dad has to do the good thing and pass some of their firearms and their firearms knowledge down to their children. Would you agree? I hope you're doing that. Okay, another random thought on my new Walther PPS M2. Very fine single stack 9mm, by the way. I found out that Walther was having an issue with their magazines for that gun. There are little dust covers that sit inside of the magazine extensions on the 7-round and 8-round mags. And if that dust cover is not in place, the magazine wobbles inside of the pistol. Now, it didn't cause it to malfunction, because I was at the range with Ben the other day, and I was shooting that with the magazines without the dust covers. Some people call them spacers. If you buy one of these pistols, beware of that. Take a good look at the magazine extension. Insert the magazine into the pistol and see if it wobbles back and forth. If it does, you have a magazine that doesn't have the proper dust cover, which also is a little spacer that holds the magazine much more snugly in place. I called Walther today. They're sending me dust covers. You know, it depends on who I talk to there. One person said, oh, we're not going to have them for 3 weeks. I called back the next day, and he said, oh, yeah, I can send two or three of them to you. So I'm like, what's going on here, folks? But anyway, fine gun. I just wish that Walther would sharpen up their customer service a little bit and sharpen up the little things, like making sure you ship out magazines that have dust covers. I know that Walther is getting those magazines from Italy, from Metgar. But, you know, this is just part of the little details that I think manufacturers need to pay more attention to. Now, all the manufacturers have had their issues. When the Smith & Wesson Shield first came out, they had a recall. XDS, Springfield had a recall on the XDS. Glock 43s had an issue with not being able to insert magazines because they had an oversized mag button in some of their early Glock 43s. So, you know, I understand, and it seems like many manufacturers are at too much of a rush to get these pistols to market, to start making money, and the little things get overlooked. But I've got to tell you, I'm very impressed with the PPS M2. It's like a miniature PPQ M2, which I'm also very impressed with that gun. Could a Walther PPQ surpass my G19? I don't know. Let me grab this phone call and I'll give you more thoughts on that. All right, sorry about that. I had to grab a call and make some money. I was talking about the Walther PPQ M2. You know, it's almost the same size as a Glock 19. It's a little bit larger. Same capacity, 15 rounds in the mag, one in the chamber. A listener emailed me recently and asked me what I thought of the Walther guns, especially for competition. And he was talking about the Walther PPQ 5-inch. I've had a chance to shoot a Walther PPQ 5-inch. Thank you, Tracy Thronberg. I appreciate that. Last November when she and Chaz Murray came down to San Antonio to teach Beyond Concealed Carry Advanced with us. I got a chance to shoot that. I was very impressed with that 5-inch. I did a YouTube review on it. Go to my YouTube channel. Just search Handgun World on YouTube. You will find it. And I recently did a YouTube video on the new PPS M2. You know, I would say out of the box, that Walther PPQ M2 is set up beautiful for not only competition, but for concealed carry. You know, you don't have to do anything to the trigger. The trigger on that is I still think it's the best striker-fired trigger that you can buy. The only thing you have to do is you got to change out the sights, but I will tell you that I think the Walther factory sights, they're kind of like Glock, they're plastic. I think they're better. They're better than the Glock factory sights by far. And I still have the factory sights on my Walther PPQ. But you can get good night sights for it. It's a terrific gun. And if you're going to shoot IDPA, it's a great gun for the CCP division, concealed carry pistol division. I think that's about the largest gun that you can shoot in the CCP division. But it's very good. A little bit higher of a bore axis than what I like. In other words, the gun sits a little bit higher in my hand. The line of the bore is a little bit higher in the hand than a Glock. And I notice it because I notice a little bit more muzzle rise. But it does get back on target very nicely because of its ergonomics. So the ergonomics of the Walther PPQ I like. Some people say they have trouble accidentally depressing the magazine released button. I've trained a lot with the gun. I don't have a problem with it. I'm going to train some more this weekend with it and see if that happens. Walther can give you a stronger mag button spring. So if you have that problem, get a stronger magazine release spring and install that, and that will eliminate that problem. It also has a pretty extended slide release, but again, I don't use that. However, some people accidentally with their thumb depress that slide release, and so what happens is sometimes the gun doesn't lock back after the last round is fired. If you have accidentally depressed the slide release lever. Now, there's a few things you can do. You can cut that back. You can change your grip. And that's probably the best thing to do is to change your grip. You know, I use pretty much the same type of grip on every pistol that I shoot. And most of the time I don't have the issue with accidentally hitting the mag release. Now with my little Car PM9, that gun is so small that every once in a while my thumb hits that. But, you know, here's my thought. The chances of you reloading in an actual gunfight are very slim. Very slim. And I really think, unless you have a malfunction, you're going to be dealing with the magazine you have in your gun. That's pretty much it. You're going to be dealing with the magazine that you have in your gun. When the fight's over, just go ahead and reload anyway. Reload and run the slide and chamber around. I don't even care if you had a round in there. Insert a new magazine, run the slide. Okay, it'll eject the round that was in there and put a fresh one in. The fight's over, but you still want to have a loaded gun. Maybe the fight won't be over. Maybe 15 seconds later, some of the bad guy's friends show up. That's why you want to have a loaded gun, fully loaded gun again. So I don't think that's a major, major issue. Again, I think accidentally pressing the slide catch lever or slide release lever, you can fix that by sometimes making modifications to the lever or just changing your grip. Now, accidentally pushing the mag release button, that's a big problem, because that'll turn your semi-automatic into a single-shot pistol. Once that magazine comes out, you know, you're not going to have any more ammo to fire. So that's an issue you got to get corrected. Again, I have not had that issue with my Walther PPQ. If it starts to become an issue, I will get an extra-powered magazine spring mag button spring from Walther. Okay. With all that said, that pretty much wraps up the random thoughts here that I wanted to talk about. But I do want to say one more thing before I finish it up to the listener that asked me about Walther guns from a competition standpoint. Yeah, get one. Yeah, get one. They're great guns. They're excellent for competition. All right. Next segment coming up shortly. All right, well, that's all for this episode. Folks, you know, I do want to say one more thing, though, about Derek's voicemail earlier. You know, most of establishing yourself as the victim or establishing of yourself as the good guy, it's going to come after you have to use your gun in self-defense. I firmly believe that. And again, I've never had to do this, and I really hope I don't. But in studying and listening and learning from people who have had to do it, what I have learned is your actions after you have to fire your gun. That's going to be vitally important. Being the first to call 911, using language like help. He was trying to kill me. He had a gun. He was trying to kill me. I was in fear for my life. Those kinds of words help establish you as being in the right when you had to use your gun. It was a justifiable self-defense use. Okay, folks. I'm Bob Main. Don't forget about our Shooters Club. And the classes that Ben and I are teaching, you can find all of Ben's classes at modernselfprotection.com. You can go to handgunworld.com. Don't forget about my Amazon store. Make your purchases, your Amazon purchases through my store, handgunworld.com, and click the Amazon store and follow that link. You'll be able to help me out financially without having to spend any extra money. Just make your purchases through my Amazon affiliate link. I'm Bob Main. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. And as I learned from Paul Carlson from the Safety Solutions Academy podcast, evil does not exist in the holster. It exists in the hearts of men and women. Shoot straight, shoot safe. I'll talk to you next week. Goodbye.